This is the unofficial Vegas podcast. On this special edition of the podcast, Fred sits down with co-author of the unofficial guide to Las Vegas, Seth Kaberski, who recently took a trip to Las Vegas and shares his experiences with Fred.
Okay, a big welcome to my guest today, Seth Kaberski. Welcome, Seth. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you again. It's been too long.
Yes. Last time we saw each other, I think, was in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken, back in May. Was it May of 2022? Late May, I think.
Yeah, it seems like longer, but it's been less than a year since our last big research trip. Yes. Out there. We got to do some VR out there. Appreciate That's your right. help. Thank you for helping us research some of the new VR attractions that we've highlighted in the book this year.
Yes. And because of the pandemic, it had been a few years since we got out there to do updates on the book. So tell us about the updates this year to the unofficial guide to Las Vegas.
This year's book is really kind of like a whole new book. Every year when we do a new update, you know, there's always maybe about 20% of the book gets rewritten. And usually, you know, 75% to 80% of what's in there is still valid from one year to the next. But because of the downtime during the pandemic, because of everything that changed, and because we had taken a year off, I feel like there's hardly a page in this book that hasn't been changed. There's been so many changes, new hotels, great turnover in shows, lots of new restaurants and attractions. So there's really huge new changes in this book. I'd say some of the big categories in terms of hotels, we've got Resorts World opening up. We've got, in terms of attractions, Area 15 was the big new addition to the scene. And we've had some big new shows that have come and gone already from the Strip.
Yeah, and typical Vegas style, you never really know if a show's going to last or not. But let's talk about, okay, you mentioned Resorts World. That's kind of the big new hotel on the Strip. Did you get a chance to check out that hotel?
Not only did I get to check it out, we actually got to stay there for a few days at the Conrad. One thing to know about Resorts World, it's called that because it's actually three different resorts. There's the Hilton, the Conrad, and... Oh, I am the Crockford.
Yes,
is the high end one. So depending on what your budget is, you can pick what kind of room you want. But all of them get access to basically all of the hotel's amenities, and it really is a resort in the sense of a great variety of dining, of shopping, of entertainment, things that you could, you know, occupy yourself for 3 or 4 days easily without having to leave and explore the rest of the Strip, which is a good thing because it's not at a bad location, but it's an inconvenient design. It doesn't make it really conducive to pedestrian or car access coming to and from. So you've kind of got to plot your trip in and out of there, in and out of the complex. A little parking unfriendly because of where they set up the parking garages. And the only benefit at the beginning was that those parking garages used to be free, but now you've got to be a member of their loyalty club in order to park there for free. So that's a tip to check out before you drive yourself over there.
So is it inaccessible if you're on foot? Like if you're walking the Strip and wanted to go check out Resorts World, can you easily do that?
Pedestrians can access it through the shopping area. There is an entrance right off of the Strip that goes right into the shopping area. And that's also good access to their theater and also nightclubs. However, the catch is that it's at a section of the Strip that's not the most pedestrian friendly. It's sort of tending towards that north end of the Strip. Is north of the Wynn and the Fashion Show Mall. So that's kind of the top, the north end of where it's really pedestrian friendly in terms of lots of tourist traffic. It's busy enough that you don't feel unsafe. When you get to this stretch from Resorts World to Circus, and then finally up to Stratosphere, gets a little more sketchy. You've got some long stretches where there's just construction walls. I've noticed that the local unhoused population seems to be a little more aggressive in those blocks. There is a police substation there to sort of, you know, there is definitely since the pandemic, like a lot of big cities across the country, there's been an increase in people feeling unsafe. And I would say that, you know, I probably would not go strolling north of the Wynn up towards the Resorts World after dark, if I wasn't, you know, with a group of people, especially if I was not, if I was not male, to be perfectly honest. I don't know if I would feel comfortable. During the daytime, I wouldn't have a problem, but I'll be honest. I took a hike from Resorts World up to Strat and back again, and it was slightly sketchy.
Interesting. Okay, that's relatively new, because one thing we could say about the Strip, and I know the North End is a little bit of a, there's not much up there, at least there wasn't before
the Resorts World was there. The problem is that you have long gaps. It's starting to fill. Right. Now the Resorts World is there, it's starting to fill in, but there's still, on the west side of the Strip, heading north, you know, in that area of Resorts World, Circus, you got like a big dirt lot that was used for a music festival once, and nothing has happened there. And it's, you know, it's an area where when you don't have something positive happening, then you wind up having things negative happen. It creates kind of a void. You know, we are big fans. Back in the day, we used to walk everywhere we could in Vegas. Between us getting older and the earth getting warmer, I'm becoming an increasing fan of using Uber and Lyft to get from one resort to another. You do have those pedestrian bridges that take you over the major intersections. So if, you know, you're down in a cluster around like MGM and New York and those kind of things, and you're just walking from one to another, and no big deal. But if you're at the south end of Strip and you want to go visit Resort World, I would recommend hailing a Lyft to take you there.
I can't imagine a city better equipped for something like Uber and Lyft. Mm-hmm. Like, it just makes so much sense in Vegas.
Another great now that I think of it, an even better transportation option might be taking the Loop, the Hyperloop, from the Boring Company. You know, you can say what you want about its owner, but it is in operation, and it takes guests in Teslas. Right now, they're still driven by human beings. Someday, they're supposed to be autopiloted, but for now, you basically get to ride in a little tube between the convention center. And it's the first major stop outside of the convention center is right there in the basement of Resorts World.
Interesting. Okay.
If you are attending anything at the convention center, that might be extremely handy for you.
That's really interesting. You've mentioned a few times about the pandemic, and obviously this is the first book update since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Maybe before we go any further, what are the current rules for visitors of Las Vegas as it pertains to things like masking and social distancing?
This is Vegas. There are no rules, baby. Come on. Vegas was very quick to jump in with social distancing measures and put up plexiglass and you know, turn off machines, and was just as quick to get rid of all of those things as soon as they felt like they could. So if you are still concerned by the fact that COVID has not ended, you are pretty much on your own while in Vegas for looking out for yourself. When we were there last, there were virtually no restrictions, and whatever restrictions there might have been have basically evaporated by now.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my experience as well. I mean, you do see people wearing masks, specifically at tables, maybe where like poker tables, there's a lot of that, but pretty much back to normal from what I could tell. Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, Vegas is notorious as one of the last places in the country where you can still smoke indoors in many places. Yeah. Health has never been the number one concern of Vegas's target demographic.
That's a good point.
I honestly, like, I always come back from Vegas with a cold of some sort, just from, you know, people from all over the world, interacting in close quarters, touching things. It's always a recipe for getting sick. So I would, you know, if you're concerned about that, you are definitely on your own, because the hotels are not making any restrictions.
Yeah, there's very few hours of the day or of a week when you're there on an unofficial guide research trip where you're not around other people.
Not a good job if you are opposed to crowds.
Yeah.
if you're an agoraphobe or just want to be left alone, don't advise joining the research team because you don't get a lot of downtime on those trips.
One of the new things in Vegas that we both got to experience is an entire new entertainment dining complex called Area 15. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So this is right off of the Strip. It's called Area 15, both as a play on Area 51, the supposed government warehouse where all the aliens are kept, and also a reference to the Interstate 15 that it lies right along. And it's owned by a real estate developer, a house builder, who is also a huge fan of the Burning Man, which is an art festival, kind of an anarchic art festival held out in the desert. And he wanted to bring kind of the spirit of Burning Man to Las Vegas. So outside, you've got this sculpture garden with these crazy robots and creatures. And inside, it's a massive warehouse full of, I like to think of it as an adult theme park without any roller coasters. You have bars and you have places to eat, but you also have things that are a cross between an art gallery and an immersive theatrical experience. The headliner is Omega Mart, which comes from Meow Wolf, an art collective supported by Game of Thrones author George R.R. Martin. And they've come up with these immersive experiences around the country. And the Omega Mart that they've built in Area 15, it is a love it or hate it kind of thing. I know that I spent, six, almost 8 hours there over 2 days, and I could have spent much more. I know you did not get quite as immersed in it. But it's one of those things where you get it out of it, I think, as much as you put in. Some people just kind of walk in, see the weird stuff, don't really know what to make of it, and head out. And other people like me really take a deep dive and get into all of these interactive things that you can explore. There's other things like a virtual reality and zip lines, but you know, if you like electronics, if you like technology, if you like immersive experiences, and you don't necessarily want to be sitting in a casino pressing a button on a slot machine all day, there's a lot of really cool experiences to check out at Area 15. I'm really high on it. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I made a huge mistake, I think, going into Area 15. I mean, first of all, like the complex itself is really interesting. Like you described, it's kind of this warehouse with a lot going on inside of it. Omega Mart in particular, I was very excited about it, but I went in with the attitude of, okay, here's my $50, entertain me. And that's not what it is. That's not what it is at all. And in fact, it's very much like you described, a kind of choose your own adventure, immersive experience that requires you to have kind of a willingness to explore and dive in and really kind of let it marinate and just kind of go through and explore. But I knew nothing about it going in, and I just kind of went in thinking, okay, like I'm ready for the show, and that's not what it is. So I would really like to go back with more of an attitude of, okay, I need to discover what this is and where the entertainment lies. Cause it's not like in your face. You have to go looking for it.
Yeah. I probably haven't done a very good job of explaining what it is. When you walk into Omega Mart, it looks like you are just in a supermarket with some slightly odd products on the shelves. And the more you start looking around, the more you realize that there is a whole surreal dystopian kind of post-apocalyptic storyline involving transdimensional aliens and an evil corporation. And it's none of it is really told explicitly. It's all told in little post-it notes and little video clips and reading the backs of cereal boxes. And so it's the kind of thing where there's no one leading your hand and telling you, go here, do this. There is an optional card that you can purchase that lets you activate screens around it, which sort of leads you through the plot and gives it more of a game. But you can, you know, you can just walk around and look at the artwork and just admire the weirdness, or you can really jump in and start pulling open drawers and reading diaries and climbing through the walls, literally. It's one of those things that it is not passive entertainment. If you just want something that is going to spoon feed you something, you come away feeling a little disappointed. But it's the more you dig into it, the more it gives you back. Not for everyone. Definitely not for everyone. A lot of Vegas visitors want something that's, you know, more immediate and more accessible and more, you know, instantaneous. And this is something that requires a little bit of patience and thought to really get the most out of.
It's the perfect attraction for a guidebook because it's something that you need, you know, a lot of things.
We devoted a few pages to it in the book, and I wish, you know, I feel like I could write, write for days about all the details in there. And, you know, while Omega Mart is the headliner, if it doesn't sound like something for you, there is something for everyone there. There's a kind of a hot air balloon that takes you up and gives you a view of the strip. And my actually second favorite thing after Omega Mart is the Lost Spirits Distillery, which is a rum distillery. If you like rum, strong rum, straight rum, no fruity cocktail drinks. I mean, like shots of good rum. Surrounded in this cool steampunk storytelling environment with circus acts and burlesque performers, streets to explore and a submarine to dive into. It's like a haunted house with alcohol, which sounds like a terrible idea, but it actually works.
Yes. And this is, I think it's important for people to know that this is very much an off-strip attraction. It's not far from the strip, but it's not something that you would walk to from the strip.
It is absolutely not walking distance, but they have really gotten in good with the Uber and the Lyft drivers in town. They've got a good setup for pickup and drop-off.
Yeah.
So that makes it really accessible from the casinos on the strip, and also from if you're staying downtown, like in the Fremont Street area. And this is definitely a place to keep an eye on because it is growing rapidly. They just recently announced that Universal Studios is going to headline a big expansion of it. They're going to bring a permanent year-round version of their popular Halloween Horror Nights event that they have in their theme parks in California and Orlando. They're going to be building a version of that where, you know, during the day you might be able to go and shop and eat, and at night you'll have haunted houses and haunted bars. And all sorts of scary attractions. I think they do very well with their Halloween events in Florida and California. And there have been a lot of successful horror-themed escape rooms like Saw and It in Vegas. So I think this one's going to be a big winner to keep an eye on.
And I give them big points for going for it because it's such a self-contained district. Like there was nothing else there as far as I know. And so they kind of went for it with the amount of money that they poured into this area. I'm really curious to see if they can make a go of it because there's a lot there. And like you said, there's something for everybody.
Yeah. I think the advantage is that the developer has owned this land for quite a while, basically owns this huge strip of land. And it has been underutilized for a long time. And this is kind of creating a new center of a gravity for entertainment on that side of town. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing that whole district, to see other people on the fringes of this, you know, popping up and taking advantage of the interest that they're pulling to that area.
That will be a sign that it's got some long-term guts to it because if we see.
It is definitely, I mean, they're deeply invested in this. This is not a flash in the pan company that's going to fold up overnight, especially when you have a deep pocketed company like Universal investing in it. You know, they're not going to want to see something that they put their name on disappear, you know, prematurely.
Yeah. And Halloween is a big time in Vegas already. So if they have themed nights over there, you know, a la Horror Nights, that could be a huge party and a good time, I think, for people that are into that.
Universal's got themselves some pretty strong IP. They've got characters like Jack the Clown that have become really popular among the theme park fans. Plus, they've got the rights to folks like Jordan Peele and Blumhouse. That I think that they can get both, you know, and they've always got the classic monsters, you know, who doesn't love Frankenstein and Dracula. Yeah. So I think between those, they've got enough, you know, potential, characters and topics to really, make that year round and constantly be changing out. You know, that's the key. If they can keep up with whatever the new films that come out, keep up with new characters, to keep people coming back.
Let's go back to the strip for a minute. You mentioned some shows that have already come and gone since the last edition. What do you like on the strip right now for new shows?
You know, it's some shows that I was really excited for have either disappeared already or look like they are likely to go away soon. Bad Out of Hell, the Meatloaf musical. Yep. I'm a fan of Meatloaf. I actually saw him perform years ago himself at Planet Hollywood, and he gave a great show, and I was looking forward to the Meatloaf show, but it lasted less time than yesterday's leftover meatloaf in the fridge. Gone within days of us adding it to the book.
Yeah, of course.
And Awakenings, which is at the Wynn, which was the replacement for La Rev, which is still a very well-regarded show.
Yes.
The Awakenings has not been catching fire. A lot of praise for the visuals, for the puppetry, a lot of confusion with the plot, a lot of issues with the pacing and the energy. So I'd look, if that doesn't get completely revamped, I would look for that to maybe disappear before too long. One other, and there was another one that I liked, Extravaganza, which was sort of like in the tradition of the old Jubilee. Jubilee was the last of the old school showgirl, you know, feathered headdresses kind of shows. And those are now completely gone from Vegas. So if your vision of Vegas is like a tall woman with no top and wearing a big thing on her head, slowly walking down a staircase, that Vegas is completely gone. There were some shows that I really did like. And I think the one that stood out the most that I did not expect to enjoy as much as I did was Red, which is at the Strat. It is a kind of an adult Cirque du Soleil. I have a feeling that some folks who worked on the Zoomanity, which used to be at New York, New York, might have been involved in putting this one together, because it's very similar to that, but faster paced, higher energy, really tremendous performers. The acrobatics are as good as any Cirque show, except they don't have clothes on. If you are an adult who likes looking at people without their clothes on, and you have already seen the Cirque shows and want something a little spicier, this is kind of like the best of both worlds crossed between Cirque and the Spiegel worlds, like the Absence. It was, I thought, a really, really great addition for the Strat. And I hope that is still around by the time we do the next edition.
Yeah, the number of reasons to go up to the Strat has been limited in the past years. So if they have
I will say, the upper level of the Strat with the attractions, there's a shopping mall up there that is a zombie mall now. There's very little that's still alive up there. They still have a couple thrill rides. But you know, that attractions level at the Strat is not what it once was. But they have introduced some new shows. There was another one that they do that's family friendly called Illuminate, which is hip hop dancers with costumes that glow in the dark. They're costumes with like neon lights that synchronize to the music. They've appeared on America's Got Talent, they're a solid show if you like dance and you want something that's family friendly.
And there's no Celine in Vegas right now, and that seems to be a story that's still unfolding.
I think Adele might be the new Celine.
Well, that's what we were talking about before, but yeah, Adele. So what can you tell me about Adele and her concerts and her venue?
I can tell you that I cannot afford tickets to her show. You know, a lot of people, there was a lot of controversy when her show initially was postponed, you know, made a lot of social media. And, you know, I'll be honest that, you know, I wasn't sure that she would come back from that, but she's had stellar reviews for the show she's been doing at the Coliseum. It's a very intimate show, just over 4,000 seats. So it's a relatively small house. And, you know, it really focuses on her voice, her emotional journey. I've heard nothing but good things about it from folks who have seen it. But, you know, you're looking at $1,000 starting price if you want to get in the door. And a lot of people are paying a lot more than that. So, you know, it's the era of the big headliner in Vegas. It's not what it once was. You know, there was a time where you had some folks like Celine Dion who were there week in and week out, you know, for long stretches. Adele is just doing weekends, and you see a lot of residencies now that are people are just calling it a residency, but they're really just coming in for a couple weeks. So I don't know when we'll see another kind of mid-career star headliner coming in doing an extended show. But I guess if you're Adele, if you can do two or three shows a weekend and make that kind of money, more power to you.
I mean, Katy Perry, I think she's doing Resorts World. That's one, maybe. Yes.
Katy Perry did Resorts World, but I don't know how, you know, Resorts World, they've had a bunch of these residencies, but they are all in short blocks. You know, she'll do 2 weeks, three weeks or so. So it makes that really hard to give something like that a review in a guidebook when they're there for such short windows. But, you know, generally the thing with those headliners is, you know what you're going to get. If you are a fan of that performer, their Vegas shows usually pull out all the stops. So, you know, you're going to pay a lot, but you'll usually get your money's worth.
David Blaine is a guy that you would think would have had a Vegas show before, but I don't think he has until this new,
he's got that residency, on and off going on at Resorts World. My magician friends who have seen it, they had mixed reviews.
Okay.
David Blaine's a very divisive performer. I'd say the only magician that I know who conjures up more love and hate would probably be Chris Angel.
yes.
You get very strong reactions when you mention Chris Angel. I'm a fan of David Blaine.
Me too.
I liked him. I liked him from back in his early Street Magic days.
Yes.
I think that the more he got with the big stunts, the less credible I found some of the woo-woo of it. But I really like his intimate close-up magic. And Resorts World, again, they built that theater so that even the furthest back seat, I think, is less than 100 feet from the stage. It was deliberately built with very shallow very shallow sight lines. So that's a great venue for having a really intimate experience.
And we can't talk about Vegas shows without at least getting an update on what's going on with Cirque du Soleil. There isn't a lot to report other than maybe their new show, Mad Apple, which I haven't seen. I don't know if you had a chance to check it out.
I did not personally see it. We sent Melinda Shekels, who is a very prominent nightlife writer for many years in Las Vegas, and she is sort of our designated woman on the ground. When we can't get to something, we send her. You know, I think the thing with Mad Apple is if you're going in for a Cirque show, there's probably other shows that are a lot more Cirque-y. This is the first Cirque show that's built around a stand-up comedian who serves as a host. I am always of the opinion that Cirque du Soleil shows are best when they're not talking. When they're not speaking to you, they're speaking to you with words. They're doing it with abstract, you know, lyricless music and visuals that you can put your own interpretation on. You know, this is kind of shoehorned Cirque into more of a comedy cabaret variety show. So You know, the acts themselves are always good. They always have, you know, some really talented performers. But in terms of creating like a cohesive mood, I love Cirque because I can remember the first time I went to see Mystère, which is the oldest one. And I still think is up there as maybe the best one. And walking out of there, like floating on clouds, just feeling like I had been, you know, taken to another dimension and I wasn't quite sure where I was. And, you know, Mad Apple, you know, there's fun things to look at. You're going to laugh, but I don't think anyone's calling it that kind of transcendent experience like a Mystère or even a Love can be.
Yeah. And it does not necessarily mean that they're trying to go for that, you know, but it's good to know what it is when you go in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And that's at the New York, right? It's for in the Arts Humanity Theater. Right.
And other than that, the Cirque had a show called Run that ran out very, very quickly. It was an action adventure with Robert Rodriguez directing it that did not last very long. The only thing that's lasted from that is the big video screens are now being used by America's Got Talent. They're over at the Luxor doing a variety show. Other than that, you know, Cirque, they brought back O and Love and Michael Jackson. I was also glad to see Spiegelworld. They also came back. They've got their original show Absinthe over at Caesar. But the one that I really like to point people towards is the Atomic Saloon show. That is over at Vegas. That is over at the Venetian. And if you ever went to the Hoop-Dee-Doo review at Disney and thought, this is good, but it would be better with sex and alcohol.
An R-rated Hoop-Dee-Doo. I love it.
This is the show for you. It's, it's set inside like a ghost town. Amazing set work. You know, you could just spend hours looking at all the antique details in this, kind of Wild West saloon. And, the characters are, very much like the old, Adventures Club at Pleasure Island or, Hoop-Dee-Doo or, interactive, improvisational, but they're allowed to have an edge that you don't get at a family theme park. And some of the variety acts are anatomically improbable. I'll leave it at that. They use the human body in ways that I'm not sure God intended, but it's definitely worth putting on your list if you are not easily embarrassed.
And both of those shows are very, very popular, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So good to get tickets in advance if you can. So the Bureau of Labor Stats has showed that flight prices are up quite a bit this year, like 25%, I think. Mm. What should people expect for budgeting for trips to Vegas this year if they want to go?
Back in the day, we used to talk about how Vegas was a bargain hunter's paradise and that the whales, the big gamblers end up subsidizing all the little people. And if you know where to look, you can do Vegas on the cheap. It's not easy to do Vegas on the cheap anymore. You can do Vegas on the moderately expensive. Generally the downtown area, the Fremont Street area, and the areas right around it are less expensive than the Strip. So that is a good place to look for hotel and dining deals. We noticed a lot of things got way more expensive. Flights for sure. Even just food, transportation, rental cars is a big huge change.
I can't get a rental car anywhere for under like $500 bucks a week. It's crazy.
It's hard to find. And even if you do manage to, maybe you're part of a loyalty club and you reserve it and you're supposed to be able to just grab it and pick it up. We've had times where we have prepaid, we've been on the priority list, and we still get there and wait an hour in a line to find out that the car we were promised is not there and we've got to sit there and wait or figure something else out. I highly recommend, unless you are planning a road trip out to the Hoover Dam, or you have to do some exploring that is way out in the hinterlands, stick with the Uber, stick with Lyft.
Good tip.
It's just between gas prices, rental car prices, and the fact that everywhere wants to charge you for park, where most casinos back in the day, they, you know, gave you complimentary parking to induce you to come in and gamble. That's mostly gone at a lot of the big properties. So if you're going to cut something out of your budget, cut out the rental car and rely on ride shares instead. That's a definite tip.
Great tip. What are you looking forward to for the rest of this year and maybe into 2024? What's new and up and coming in Vegas that you're excited about?
Well, I'm not quite sure when I'm going to get out there myself, because right now I am knee deep in the unofficial guide to Disneyland and the unofficial guide to Universal Orlando. When I do get out there, I'm looking forward to the Fontainebleau finally finishing up and opening.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
This is a hotel that has been under development for, I feel like, almost
forever.
Two decades.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, basically, like, I think they started talking about this around 9/11, and it's been built, it's been stopped, it's had stuff stripped out of it, it's had stuff stuck back in it, it's changed names several times, but it is supposed to be a sister property to the famous luxury hotel in Miami, and hopefully that will finally get wrapped up and get finished. I'm excited to see, I mentioned earlier, the It Escape Room. This company has been doing branded escape rooms that really take the whole escape room concept to the next level. They've got one for the Blair Witch and also for Saw, and they were two of the best escape room experiences I've ever had. So their new one is based on the Stephen King book, It, which is probably the most inappropriate book that I read when I was 12 years old, stuck with me ever since. And I'm really looking forward to checking that one out.
Very cool. Well, this has been great, Seth. Thank you so much for giving us your updates and look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes, I really appreciate you having me on to talk about it, and can't wait to get back out there to Vegas and bring back more stuff to talk to you about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this episode. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Seth. If you're looking to travel, don't hesitate to go to touringplans.com/travel, and they will be happy to help you with any travel needs. Also, reference the unofficial guide to Las Vegas as usual. We're on all social media platforms at #UVP, and you can send us an email at unofficialvegaspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next episode, where Fred and I have some amazing news. Cheers for now.